You are listening to the Fit Mom Podcast, hosted by myself, Ash Iovino, and my co-host, Marie Zatelli.
Here we celebrate the unfiltered phases of motherhood.
On this podcast, no topics are too taboo, from menstrual cycle to menopause, weight loss, hormones, you name it.
We are here to share real stories, dumb down the science, and motivate you. So if you're ready to embrace a sustainable, healthier, and more balanced life, then welcome to your new community.
So we could jump into the prenatal mental health side of things. And as I started making notes, I realized just how in depth this conversation can go. I've got quite a few friends. I know a lot of women having babies this year, like friends from my husband's side or my side. I counted, and we're on 40 at the moment. I know it's crazy. That's crazy. And then I was chatting, I've got two very good friends who are based in the UK having their firsts as well. They're just a year older than me. And when I was talking about mental health and pregnancy, it just occurred to me, I know all of our situations are, of course, different. Symptoms-wise as well, it's been very different. But it occurred to me just how complex it can be when we were talking about like family dynamics, never mind like husband relationship with your husband and how that's changing. So I know this conversation can go into detail, but let's see where it goes.
Out of those 40, how many are first babies, or a lot of them like second, third, fourth babies?
I think it's almost 50-50. No, maybe it's like 70-30. 70 new first-time moms, and then like 30 having their like second child, like quite short after the first, which is so ironic because during this journey with Rocco being 3 years younger than me, and me often, I know you and I have spoken about it, like me never realizing I'm going to be quote unquote, not like inverted commas, an older mom, age 36. I was so aware that I didn't want to wait too long because I was like, I'm missing out on all my friends who are turning 40 this year. They had their first kids years ago. So I always felt left out. And now the irony is I've never ever entered a new year knowing 40 women who are pregnant.
Yeah. So, and I think it's like so different each pregnancy. I think you're in a different physical space, perhaps different symptoms, different emotional space, maybe a different financial space, a different space in your geographical environment. You know, there's no sort of space is exactly the same as the other. And sort of when we first chatted about doing this topic, I then reflected on both my pregnancies and sort of just how much more experience, self-experience, personal experience, knowledge of children, knowledge of motherhood, how different it would be from me a third time round. And I think sort of each pregnancy one goes into, if that is what one wants, you go in with a different perspective.
So true. And just like I feel with the symptoms physically, mentally, you win a little, and then on other fronts, there's a lot that you like sacrificing and losing. And when chatting to specifically this WhatsApp group with my two very good school friends who are going through exactly the same, we're about 2 months apart. It's just so apparent that like you moan about one thing and they're like, oh, okay. But it's so amazing that you're still exercising and that you exercise through your first trimester. And then I'm like, oh yeah, like bite my tongue. I'm like complaining about one thing, but you do. Yeah. And that is how I feel about this whole pregnancy and how a dangerous space social media can be very beneficial, especially for a first-time mom. Like if you're following the correct people that are influencing you in a manner of positivity or educational. But then there's the other side of social media as well, is this, the of course, the comparison game and going like, oh my gosh, that girl's about to pop and she looks fucking incredible. And I'm feeling like horrendous because, yeah, so I don't even know where to start with this conversation because there's so much. It's true roller coaster of emotions.
Yeah, yeah. And sort of you sort of get to know and reconcile with your symptoms. And I mean, you know, then it can become, like you say, the comparison. Well, I don't want to swap my morning sickness for your hemorrhoids, or, you know, so there's going to be symptoms and parts of pregnancy that are undesirable and enjoyable throughout.
Oh, that's so true. Yeah, that I found helpful at the beginning. We didn't share publicly. We still haven't actually just shared a post of just saying we're pregnant, partially because so much of my life in a marketing aspect, I have to promote and be online. And I just didn't want to for this private phase. But then a friend also actually today messaged me and said, you know, I'm living in a total different city away from all my loved ones and friends and family. And maybe I should, you know, just do an announcement because you'll be surprised at how many people, yes, there's the bad, but how many connections you can make and how many people reaching out. And as soon as I have opened up, you know, on like WhatsApp groups or reached out to friends, and specifically again, this group of mine, it's exactly that what you say is we all have a little bit of a vent. No one's competitive. I think this, I don't know if it's our age, being 36, 37, being so grateful that we pregnant for the first time, but there's no comparison yet. Yet maybe there will be when the breastfeeding and the sleep training and all of that kicks in, but I doubt. But it's been so supportive, and it's exactly the situation you just described of going, oh gosh, thank goodness I haven't had nausea till 22 weeks. And each one has, you know, had something that's worked out beautifully for them, and then a hell of a lot that's, you know, uncomfortable.
Yeah. And I think there is a strong, we know there's a strong correlation between physical health and mental psychological health. And if physically you're in a space of pain or struggle, discomfort, you know, that is going to have an impact on your well-being, how you're feeling mentally, psychologically, emotionally.
Yeah, 100%. And so what are some of the symptoms that some of the women may be experiencing? How do they identify with, well, we can't talk about the emotions because it's all over. I suppose, what are certain coping mechanisms, specifically if you are not coping, I suppose, if it's incredibly overwhelming, emotionally you are just struggling and you don't have capacity in other areas of your life are taking over in terms of work, or maybe it's your second child and parenting already is taking its toll. What are coping mechanisms, I suppose, for what we're going through?
I think sort of to consider from a physiological space what's going on. And I think maybe just to put this out there that we're speaking sort of your general, your norm, your average. There are moms that, for example, are diagnosed with HG and are in hospital for their 9 months of pregnancy with debilitating sickness. So I think there's those cases, but I think we'll talk to sort of the general population who aren't experiencing such debilitating symptoms. But I think first is being aware of what's happening hormonally, with your progesterone and your estrogen being at this extreme high that we haven't really experienced in other parts of our female development. You know, a lot of things are happening that are going on inside emotionally and hormonally. Now we're going to add perhaps you know, the fatigue. I don't think there's anything that compares to first trimester fatigue. I don't think I've ever fallen asleep in such strange places as I have pregnant in those first 12 weeks. And we know that fatigue has a big impact on mental health. So hormones are sort of flying high, exhausted. Maybe there is some nausea, discomfort, cramping, irritability. and now sort of we've got to carry on with life during this really big space of physical change, not to mention the emotional change. Wow, I'm going to become a mom, or I'm about to be a mom of two or mom of three. You know, there's this unknown territory that I've got to navigate. Birth, what could birth look like? Fear, anxiety. There's such a big bubble of what's going on in a pregnant woman's mind, body, soul. So I think in terms of coping mechanisms, we really have to go back to basics and sort of maybe even use like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, that we're going to find it very difficult to feel emotionally our best if our physical needs aren't being met. So is there space for us to catch up on some of that sleep? Could we carve some time for a nap? You know, are we feeling well enough to introduce some movement into our day? Could we go for a walk? Maybe we're feeling hella active and could do a gym session. But are we able to bring in some movement, some rest? Are we able to eat? Obviously, depending on cravings and where you are at with sickness, are we able to bring some nutrition in? Because it's going to be very hard to feel good if eating, sleeping, and movement's out of whack. So I think one of the first bases to begin is physically, can we do sort of more? Can we add, take away, adjust what's happening on a physiological level before we can then look at the emotional space?
Yeah, that's a good, I feel it's very good advice. And I feel, although that is the one area that I've been fortunate in, even trimester one, which for me wasn't, well, yeah, I wasn't one of those women who, you know, didn't have many symptoms and didn't realize, or, you know, they're pregnant or hear some stories. But I felt pretty much hungover, I would say more than 3 months, for 4 months. Everything, just food choices wise, it was like that typical feeling of being hungover. What I wanted to eat was purely carbs and cheese. And there was this spiral of bodies really quickly changing, really quickly feeling, for lack of a better word, gross in my own skin. And I feel ashamed to use that word, because you've got these conflicting feelings of being very appreciative of being able to fall pregnant, but then you also have this, you know, pre-programming of your body's completely changing and so quickly as well. But yeah, so the nutrition side of things, I definitely only at month five, I started to feel like, oh, I'm not just emotionally eating. I'm actually able to nourish my body. And yeah, so I had the exercise though. So although I had this hungover feeling and I was very nauseous, I had like a window period in the morning that I could just move, nothing to the intensity that I used to be able to. And mentally, that was massive for me. It still is. I still have a routine in the morning. Fortunately, again, we don't have a kid, another child that we're attending to. So I have still got the flexibility with my time, but that's been massive. And another area, I suppose, in this bubble of all the little things that we need to fulfill to support ourselves during this period, is I'm lacking in the, I wouldn't say support, because I do have the support. I'm just away from my support. Mm-hmm. So, and again, my friends who are abroad, and quite a lot of the women who are also going through this within the Fit Mom community as first-time moms or second-time moms, they also don't live in South Africa. And being away from that support network, even if you have friends, they're just, you know, not around the corner, or you don't have one thing that I'm just missing so much is we don't have a public area like a promenade or the mountain or somewhere to go walk with someone, have a takeaway coffee, you know, a typical Cape Town, and go walk along the ocean and have a fat chat. We don't have that. So yeah, you have to go out and have lunch or dinner with someone. And when you're just not feeling like socializing in that aspect, but you just want that presence of being around another woman and being able to relate, I think that's an area where I've been particularly lonely. in not being able to have that physical support network here.
Yeah, yeah. And that sort of geographical distance, you know, yes, we have ways of communicating, but it isn't the same as having that in-person connection, that especially if it's something that you've moved away from and missing, you know, that's really hard. And you know, in pregnancy and motherhood, you know, I think it's throughout the whole of motherhood, we need that tribe. But I think what people don't necessarily share is that tribe isn't given to you on the day of your positive test, that congratulations, here's the group of women that are going to support you through motherhood. It doesn't happen like that. And of course, many years ago, it was more like that, sort of, when we were more in a community setting. Now, women really have to dig and search and find that tribe for themselves. And for some, they are blessed enough to be in the physical space of that tribe. And for others that are immigrants or expats or have just moved further away, that tribe sort of has to become more electronic.
Mm-hmm.
And if we go back sort of where you were saying social media can be a space of comparison during pregnancy and motherhood that can be harmful, but there is space for connection where physically you wouldn't have had that connection otherwise, and reaching out to moms in similar spaces.
Yeah, that's very true. And I, also while you were talking, it's just also a reminder for me to, I was specifically listening to a podcast this morning about it as well, is when you are like stuck in the mud or in a bad space and you just, you know, you need someone around you, you actually just need to pick up the phone. And that's something I'm quite bad with as well, is I don't, and I know this is the period that I need to stop breaking that pattern of me just going Cancerian into my shell, hibernating and reaching out. It's this similar concept of asking for advice and or asking for help. But yeah, I think it's, you put it beautifully, is that you're not just given the tribe at the beginning. So it also needs to, I realize, come with a bit of effort from my part to find those people to reach out, to not like mope around. And then when my husband comes home, he's, you know, happy, he's had fulfillment and seeing other people, he's played battle after work. And yeah, I'm like, oh, so I'm feeling victim and sorry for myself.
Yeah. No, and I think as with any moments of struggle, it's easier to pick up the phone and make that contact when we're feeling good. And perhaps that's something to encourage if you do find yourself far away from your support network and it is more reliant on phones, is picking up that phone when you're feeling really good. Hey, just check in. I'm feeling so great today. Pregnancy is... I don't know, just sharing something quite positive. Once that communication window feels relaxed and more open, on the day you wake up feeling really low, you're more likely to pick up the phone and call that friend again, because that communication is already, but sort of if you haven't spoken to someone in a few weeks or few months, it's quite hard to reach out when you're feeling low.
So true. Part of the that forming those habits, it becomes easier. When do we know whether anxiety or intrusive thoughts or even nightmares are particularly normal, or when should we reach out to someone and, you know, if it's considered maybe a bit more serious, I suppose?
It's funny you say nightmares. Before our chat, I was reflecting on my pregnancies and how I didn't know the first time, but obviously know now in retrospect. Nightmares and vivid dreams were one of my first symptoms, both pregnancies. And I have never non-pregnant had the kind of dreams I had pregnant. So it's quite interesting that you said that. I think it's quite common, actually.
Yes, the only reason why I say it, touch wood, well, I haven't had many nightmares or strange dreams, but I remember particularly Nicole telling me about her nightmares, and they were all quite intense nightmares about birth or loss or fear of something going wrong. And then another friend of mine, she's not pregnant. Actually, she's pregnant, sorry. The symptoms of nightmares are her husband. Her husband is experiencing nightmares saying that since she's been pregnant. So, yeah, it's just something that's come up, which I find quite interesting.
I'm sure there is something hormonal in that. That's sort of out of my area of expertise, but there probably is a hormonal component to dreams and nightmares in pregnancy. But if we look at it from a psychodynamic perspective, and dreams being sort of the road, the path to the unconscious, with so much unknown going on in our minds, what if, how, when, what would it look, you know, all of these things, you know, it's not surprising that they could play out in dreams or nightmares. But to go back, when we look at sort of mental health for anyone, there are certain moments in our lives that can exasperate, accentuate, or even sort of highlight any pre-existing mental health disorders or issues. So trauma being one of them, whether that's financial, physical, or emotional, they can sort of bring our psychological issues to the surface, and pregnancy is one of them. So if a mom has a pre-existing mood anxiety disorder going into pregnancy, there is a chance that during her pregnancy or postpartum period, which is an extremely vulnerable time, those symptoms or experiences could be could be bigger or worse or more prominent. So I think firstly, if you are a mom that does have a mood or anxiety disorder or any sort of mental illness, it is important to reach out to your team, whether it's your OB or your doula, your midwife, your GP, whoever it is that you're working with, that I'm pregnant and I have struggled with this in the past, so they can also keep an extra eye out. Then in terms of in pregnancy, anxiety and depression, you know, you might experience those. But for the most part, anxious thoughts and fear, low self-esteem, low days, low moments are really common during pregnancy. The difference between those and something perhaps more clinical is, and we'll use the word pervasive. So if you're feeling sad, low energy, low mood, maybe a couple of days or a day here or there, that's probably a normal part of your pregnancy. Where we're looking at something more clinical is if that's pervasive. So it doesn't go away, it doesn't get better. And these thoughts, feelings, behaviors, moods are lasting for sort of up to 2 weeks, you know, 2 weeks and more. Okay. If you fit more into that category, it is worth, definitely worth speaking to a therapist, your doctor, someone, a member of your healthcare team, and share that these experiences aren't just fleeting, but these are pervasive. They're not going away, and it is lasting X amount of time.
Yeah, if we look at anyone who particularly hasn't had a mental health issues in the past, for instance, and they experiencing, well, just something that I'm referring to, well, personally am experiencing, is that how was I coping pre-pregnancy with certain scenarios, or when I was emotionally, you know, really down and lonely, etc. And analyzing that, because I've had the conversation with a friend who also was so reliant on stimulants pre-pregnancy, now being pregnant, not being able to rely on, you know, increased caffeine fix, alcohol, or sleeping tablets, or certain things, or certain lifestyle fixes and exercise that pure endorphin rush that you get from, you know, that personally I've been exercising a lot. I haven't had that since pregnancy because I don't push myself to that extent, obviously from a safety perspective. So if you analyze pre-pregnancy, the coping mechanisms versus now, it's quite interesting to, you know, again, be gentle towards what you're experiencing because you can no longer rely on what you used to. And it's really a period of being able to do a deep dive in coping with perhaps healthier coping mechanisms.
Yes, absolutely. It sort of forces you to empty your toolkit, have a snoop around, what can I still use and what do I have to get rid of? And I think, you know, for anyone, if they have the economical means, the financial means, sort of if they're in a privileged enough position where they can, it is really awesome to book a sort of early pregnancy appointment with a counselor, a therapist, a life coach, or somebody where some of these things can be explored, because it's a great opportunity, regardless of, you know, your background, to have a look at that, whether it's your toolkit, your coping mechanisms, your values, your morals. We empty them out, and this is where I'm at early pregnancy. How's this going to change? So I think it's a great opportunity to reach out if you have the means to do so, and have a session of sorts with somebody. If that isn't sort of where you're at, what you're after, what you can do, then, you know, still conversing, you know, with your partner, if you have a partner who's on this parenting journey with you, they're seeing a lot of you that you're not seeing of yourself, and that, you know, can reflect, hey, you know, I've really noticed around 3 o'clock every afternoon, you're becoming really irritable and frustrated. Have you noticed that as well? And sort of, you know, having those conversations, because your partner's probably observing things during this change that maybe you are, maybe you're not aware of yourself. So I think including your partner in that conversation, or journaling, or, you know, reach out to mom, sister, friend, because you can find, one can find pregnancy and motherhood very isolating. And I think that's a true realization for a lot of moms, is there are parts that feel quite isolating, but there are also things that we can do to bust through that isolation.
Yeah, I find journaling's helped. I haven't been doing it nearly as often as I've felt the need to, kind of just, you know, in the moments prioritize, you know, if I've got a gap, movement as opposed to journaling. But when I have, it's been super helpful. And I've actually set up the baby rooms, pretty much done, and I've left my mum well journal in the room, so that when I am in the space, I'm sit down peacefully, and even if I write two sentences, it's really, really helped. I find though, or I would find the advice of chatting to your partner, maybe I'd have to time it correctly, because it's such dangerous territory, specifically because the way I felt mood wise, I haven't particularly felt very, very low up until this point. And a sort of mood that I've felt more frequently is irritable. So yeah, you nailed it with that one, is very, very irritable. The last time I can recall feeling like this was almost like a hormonal teenager, and the way I'd be irritated with my mother, and her husband definitely gets that when he comes home. So I think that's where I would maybe draw the line and not ask him what other things he's noticed about me, because whatever he says certain days, I'm like, he's wrong. So
yeah, no, I agree completely. But I think sort of it in your own way communicating, and maybe then if you're already aware of that, and I think I can relate 100%, but then perhaps it looks like today I felt fucking irritable. The whole day I felt irritable. I felt like a prepubescent teen. Everything is irritating me. The weather, the food, the just dog hair, the whole world's irritating me. And he's not going to be able to fix that. But just voicing it can help us feel less isolated in those thoughts. And I think sort of if we are in that space, one of the things that we can do is check in with what do I need? What's missing? What do I need? And sort of that's where the self-care lies. It's not in the bubble bath, the girls' night away, but it's the fulfilling my needs. And why? Well, because you're the most important person in the world and to your baby. You know, you are the life source. You are so valuable, so important. And your self-care is of the utmost importance. So checking in, what do I need? Do I need a journal? Do I need a nap? Do I need a walk? Do I need, you know, some complete Zen time alone, just sitting and being, tapping into what do I need? And I think we are so good, I don't know if that's the right word, but we are so on top of taking care of our physical health for our baby in terms of our appointments, our scans. I think a good comparison is zinc. I know not everyone takes prenatals, not zinc, folic acid, sorry. I know not everyone takes prenatal vitamins and each sort of person's on their own journey, but one of the things that all of us are encouraged is folic acid and for the development of baby and how important it is. But it becomes something like brushing your teeth. You take your folic acid and self-care in pregnancy should be on that same level, that I wake up or before I go to bed, I take my folic acid. My emotional well-being is of the same importance.
Yeah, that's very, very true. It's funny how during this phase we tend to prioritize certain things, and neglect other things or just take it for granted. And it's so important to do it now because all of my mom friends, they always talk about how they put themselves last. So if we don't start trying at least implementing these habits now with self-care, yeah, it's just going to be harder once baby arrives. We often, or I particularly often hear about postnatal depression. Is prenatal depression just as common and something that, you know, you might experience even if you haven't had any other sort of depression or mental health issues in the, not issues is a bad word, but yeah, in the past?
So we hear postpartum depression being sort of at the forefront, that's the one that everyone seems to know, not necessarily because they've experienced it. Maybe it's just the one that's spoken about the most. But we tend to refer to them as, and if you think of the acronym PMADS, so it'll be perinatal. Now, perinatal includes pregnancy, postpartum up to a year after. So your perinatal period is your whole pregnancy, birth, postpartum in one. So perinatal mood and anxiety disorders would be anxiety, depression, and that's in the whole perinatal period. So of course, you know, we do see this pregnancy and postpartum. And I think there's also an important sort of thing to look at there, that postpartum people might think is this brief period after birth. Maybe they have the perception that it's a few days after birth. Maybe they think it's a couple of months, and then after maternity leave, they're no longer postpartum. Whereas we can look at postpartum being that whole first year, while your body, mind is adjusting to this new role of being mom or mom of two or mom of three. But I think one of the areas that we can have a look at is maybe nervousness And we know that anxiety has a close relationship to control. So our anxiety believes that the more we can control, the less unknown, unexpected things happen. And unknown, unexpected things can be scary. So we try and control our environment as much as we can to avoid the unknown, the apprehension, the scary bits. And one of the things that pregnancy kind of forces us into is letting go of control. And for many of us, this sort of not everyone, but I think a majority, we have quite a lot of control of our physical bodies. It's one of the few things we do have a lot of control over. And sort of we know what we can eat and can't eat and what works for us, what doesn't work. And we have a lot of control over what's happening to our body. For example, sort of exercise, food, or even sort of self-care, whether it's shaving or makeup or showering, we put a lot of control into our physical being. And then we fall pregnant. And suddenly we're not the only person in control of this body. That we're now transportation and an incubator for another being that's in our body, but also a separate little person. And that whole perspective of I am the only one in control of my body shifts and changes. Not only do we experience that, but now we can't see this little being. So we sort of, is everything okay? What's happening in there? I've heard many times moms say they wish they had a sort of perspex tummy so that they could have a peek in and see what's going on. But there's a big surrender of control that I can do the best I can to keep this baby safe and healthy. But so much of it is out of sort of my control. And that is scary. There's anxiety there. And then birth. We can have our birth intentions, our birth plans, but we know that we don't have full control. So I think a lot of the perinatal and well into motherhood, we suddenly have this disruption in what we can control and how much control we have. And I think one of the biggest lessons the perinatal period teaches us is to surrender. Mm-hmm. And if you do have a pre-existing anxiety or you are a more nervous or vigilant individual, that can be really challenging. So, you know, yes, there are clinical diagnoses and individuals that need more psychiatric help, but there are also individuals that still experience these feelings of anxiety, nervousness, apprehension.
That's so true. It's exactly what I felt from the very, very beginning already, was this resistance to surrender and this need for control. And as soon as I surrendered to one symptom, something else would pop up. And then it was another like process of working through things to surrender to the next. And then it was like, and I was chatting to when all of this was happening in December, and I just finished my first trimester and had a birthday party in Cape Town. A mom friend I was chatting to, and I was like, I don't want to sound negative, but, you know, I've had friends go through this for many years and always heard about the experiences, and obviously had my own idea, as much as you try not form an idea of what it's going to be like when you're pregnant, naturally comes. And I just was moaning about a few things, and she made a very, very valid point, which I remind myself every day, is she said, you know, this is what pregnancy is meant to be like. It's supposed to be challenging and tough because you are technically shaping into a new role of becoming a mom. And what if pregnancy was a breeze? Can you imagine the shock you'd have when you have a child? Because of course, there's so much to surrender with having a baby, but you also got no idea what the birthing experience is going to be like. And things that aren't going to go according to plan. And so if pregnancy was this beautiful process, I think mentally we would go into like full blown depression if we had a child after this high.
And I think sort of on that, how we experience our pregnancy isn't an indicator of how we'll experience motherhood. You know, that they are two separate pieces of your journey. And if your pregnancy was horrific and you struggled to find the silver lining in a really, really tough time, that doesn't mean you're going to have a really difficult time bonding with your baby, connecting with your baby, or a really difficult journey into motherhood, that the two aren't, you know, of the same. And I think in flip as well, you could be that mom with a really easy pregnancy that had little to no symptoms and flew through it. Well, that doesn't mean that her baby's going to land on her chest and it's going to be dreamy and perfect forevermore. You know, we are going to experience different trials and tribulations throughout the journey. But I think societally, there's a pressure, and not just I think in motherhood, but there's a pressure that different is bad. That I am my body, if we focus on the physical being, my body's going to be different after pregnancy. And there's sort of this negative connotation that it's never going to be the same. And you are going to be different. There is a lot of changes that might never be the same, but that doesn't mean bad. And I think that's somewhere that as moms, we can try reframe for ourselves that I probably won't ever look exactly the same as I did, but that doesn't mean I won't look good. That doesn't mean I'm not strong. That doesn't mean I'm, you know, not resilient. It means that I'm different. You know, I am a different person now as a mother.
And so that just reminds me of, a couple of years ago in our 20s, I suppose, when friends were having kids earlier on, and we didn't have the social media exposure and this toxic bounce back body culture exposure that we had back then. One thing that I'm actually, it's inspiring to see is, like you say, your body is different. Is so many women that have told me how their bodies are so much stronger than they were pre-pregnancy. And like, that's also so inspiring to hear, because you're so used to, you know, hearing a lot of negative talk around bodies and your boobs are never going to be the same. And you can have this, if you have a C-section, X, Y, and Z, and if you have natural, you're still not guaranteed that, you know, you're going to get your tummy back or whatever, whatever. There's so much negativity around it. There's a lot of negativity around people giving advice of just wait, you know, you think you've got it, especially if you're giving a positive, you know, response to how you're feeling. It's kind of like, well, get that sleep in, because just wait till baby arrives. So it's a hard space to be in, surrounded by that negativity. But something that also has given me a bit of peace of mind is also realizing, even with those women who I know who've said, oh, pregnancy, I love it, it's been a breeze, the more you chat and things get like sort of to a deeper level, you realize it hasn't been a breeze. So don't take everything that people say so literal. Specifically on the nausea front, I remember first trimester having some friends go like, oh no, I feel amazing in first trimester, and you're just like swaying internally, just wanting to like punch someone. But I've then realized, but there's so many things, like we said, that they haven't shared. And even friends that have said, oh, they have this, you know, amazing first trimester, they don't have many symptoms, I've even heard them later on talk about, you know, feeling shit, feeling nauseous, feeling, and I'm like, but wait a minute, you're one of those who said that you don't feel nauseous. So you just don't know how truthful people are sometimes. Not that they always have to be, but I suppose we just take everything that they take so seriously and then compare it to our situation.
Yeah. And I think we're also given the narrative that to complain means to be ungrateful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think many of us have been at times reserved in sharing how difficult, how painful, how at times horrible something's been, because we might get a comment such as, oh, if it's bad now, just wait, it gets worse. Or, you know, you chose to be pregnant, or, well, you knew this was going to happen. So there are those snarky and hurtful comments that are often well-meant. They're not meant with malicious intent, but that can put people off being honest about their experience. And how you've highlighted it is exactly it. They keep that experience themselves. And then the moms around think, oh my gosh, she has it so easy, so marvelous, so, you know, struggle-free, when really she just might be in a space of not wanting to share what it's really been like.
Gosh, you really give a different perspective on it. It's so good to hear that, because I suppose the ego immediately wants to think of it as a negative, of going like, why would they share? Why do they almost, you feel like they're looking over you, or they feel like you feel like they think they're above you when they, you know, don't get down deep and emotional. That's what my first instinct is to be like, stop thinking you're better than anyone else. Whereas the way you put it is, she's so true, and I feel quite guilty now, is, yeah, maybe just like all of us have our struggles, maybe it is something that they're too scared to open up to because they have had such negative responses in the past.
Yeah, no, I think that from what I've seen professionally, personally, in my own experience, that the societal pressures have a big impact on how we feel emotionally and physically during pregnancy, of course in motherhood as well, but if we focus on pregnancy. And I think what's quite unique about pregnancy is there's a growing physical representation of how we're feeling, and sort of if you're struggling with something, with self-esteem or body image or sort of any internal struggle outside of pregnancy, people might never comment. But when you're pregnant, especially sort of late second to third trimester, there's suddenly a physical, there's a visual that then creates input from others. You know, so people, maybe they'll say, are you sure there's only one in there? Which, I mean, is helpful to no one. Or, you know, you must be popping any day now, and meanwhile, you're 4 months pregnant. Or you can get the opposite of, oh, but you're hardly showing. And that mom might internalize it as, am I doing something wrong? Am I not eating enough? Is baby not, you know, there's so many, and again, well-meaning people, I think, don't do it from a malicious space. But because there's a physical growing, people almost, because it's there visually, people comment and you receive feedback, and you receive maybe positive feedback, but maybe criticism, and suddenly a really internal journey of self-esteem, body image, thoughts becomes visual, becomes external, becomes seen and shared with others. And I think that's quite a unique experience.
That's so true. It's sometimes I'm like flabbergasted at what people have the audacity to say. But just as much as, I suppose I'm still wearing a lot of loose clothes and don't have as many social occasions yet, so I don't get too many of the comments. But just as much as we don't want the negative comments, the positive ones of woman telling you like, oh, you carried so well, like, or any compliment, I find like I can't get enough of them. Like, I need more, please.
Yeah, and I think sort of, you know, we have societal again, you know, if we use the word fat, it's deemed as unacceptable or bad. And then as mom grows, there is an incorrect perception of connecting the two, that I'm getting fat. And weight gain and fat, we know, are very different. And I think there's the visual representation in your book of what part of your weight gain is attributed to what. And I think that's another thing for us to reframe is, you know, no, I'm not getting fat. You know, this weight gain isn't negative. This weight gain doesn't mean I'm doing something wrong. This weight gain doesn't mean I failed, which so often in a woman's journey, weight gain, we do tell ourselves, does mean that kind of thing. Very few times in a woman's life does she step on the scale and see she's gained weight and rejoice that something great's happening, you know. And I think we can see it in, for example, weight training. I mean, that's something that I can relate to recently is, you know, as we're growing and gaining muscle, we potentially are going to be gaining weight. And even though I think I have a healthier relationship with my body than I ever have before, and the insight into knowing that, visually seeing a number on a scale can still feel quite triggering, that I've gained weight. And to myself, longevity of great strength, I've gained, you know, skeletal support, like all these incredible things. And I think we can frame pregnancy in the same way, that when I've gained weight in pregnancy, I've gained a human, I've gained a long life connection that can't be matched to anything else. I've gained unconditional love. And we can really change that narrative to that weight is representative of so much more than the non-fact of I've gained fat.
So true. And I think this is also, I never personally on the way, I'm glad we're ending off on the side of the physical, well, the mental impact of what the physical side of pregnancy has, because it's such a interesting topic for me, of course, being involved with Fit Mom and us always talking about weight training and weight loss, specifically for women that wanting to, you know, achieve a certain body physique, etc. I find it such a sensitive area to speak about as well. I see myself as having a fairly healthy relationship with my body and with food, particularly just because I definitely have, you know, being a woman growing up, have had certain insecurities stick with me for a very long time, and then also going into a career of PR, which is predominantly women, and which has kind of a negative perception out there that PR, which it often is like events and socializing and what you look like, and you know, you technically a publicist, so you're surrounded by a lot of the shallow sort of life out there, socializing, etc., on a different scale with the who's who's. And I definitely had to break free of certain programming, etc., and with being part of the Fit Mom community and just having a healthier relationship in general with food and loving movements, so consequently my body just being better, in better shape, I assumed I was going to enter pregnancy with a, you know, I remember friends telling me how they felt beginning pregnancy, and me always just in my head going like, that's not going to be me. I'm not going to complain about my physical body because I'm just going to be so appreciative that I've fallen pregnant. And, you know, you're growing a child. Of course, your stomach's growing and things are going sideways and your clothes aren't going to fit. Like, that was my attitude. And of course, then when it starts to happen to you, and it happens in ways that, you know, for me, for instance, I didn't anticipate having 4 months of, I don't want to sound like I'm like belittling myself or speaking bad about myself, but literally felt like I've just had like a big Buddha beer pains, fat, like stomach. It was just flabby. I envisioned, oh, it's going to be like a hard bump, you know, early on. So that was an adjustment, is having 4 solid months over December period of just being comfortable, again, surrendering, going, okay, you know, everyone carries differently. And I immediately then adjusted, you know, my wardrobe, packed away pretty much all of my summer things, whereas a tie waisted or tight or whatever, packed that away, and just knowing that's just not going to be something I'm going to wear in the near future going into, you know, winter with having a baby. But there was so much surrendering, and I really didn't think that from a physical acceptance point of view that it would take me so long, and take me little bits of chipping away and surrendering and acceptance that I only felt at 5 months more in a space of being proud and accepting. And I think it's twofold. Like, I think I also had this very positive, you know, a sort of outlook of how it was going to be at the beginning. But then I also had this very, I also expected the worst. So when I got to 5 months, I was like, oh, okay. Like, you know, my legs aren't ginormous, or my body isn't changed into a way that I thought it would. And I think it also comes, again, if I had to analyze it just from a, you know, a vanity perspective, I had a period in my 20s when I lived in the UK that I put on weight and body changed in ways, picked up like 7-8 kgs. And I'm fairly short, so it was all around like my stomach and my legs and my bum area. And I had this assumption that, oh my gosh, I'm going to hit 4 months or 5 months and I'm going to have that body again. I'm going to have that body that was created not from having a human, but created from literally beer and pub lunches and being much younger. So a friend told me during that time, she just said, just remember, it's just a phase, and you get so stuck in where you're at. So quick to compare that, oh my gosh, I could run 10 kilometers, I could lift X amount of weight, my body looked this way, I'm never going to be there again. And the negative comments from other people obviously don't help when they say, oh, you can kiss, you know, that butt goodbye. Oh, you looked amazing pre-pregnancy. Don't think you're ever going to look like that again. So it's such, there's so much happening physically that you're coming to, you know, coming to peace with, and then the mental aspect of it, and then the fear aspect of it, of like, am I ever going to be able to wear those shorts of mine or those pants of mine? Not that it actually fucking matters at the end of the day, but with being an emotional and with everything changing, those are the things that go through your mind.
Yeah. And I think you described that beautifully, in the self-esteem, body acceptance, relationship with body is never linear. That it does ebb and flow. And like you described, the 4 month into 5th month period, I think that you'll probably experience that a few more times during the rest of your pregnancy and postpartum, where there are dips of, this feels unfamiliar, I feel uncomfortable, I don't like these changes, to, okay, you know, it's been a change, and it's at times felt challenging to accept, but I am up again, and then we come up again. And I think that is, you know, the reality of our relationships with bodies, is that they aren't linear, and we will have these ups and downs of acceptance to disappointment to acceptance again. And I think it's on that note important to not reject our struggles. That if we wake up and we're feeling, you know, maybe there's some new stretch marks, maybe, oh, I remember being terrified when people spoke about the Mari biscuit nipple that was going to happen during pregnancy. And I, you know, like, would look and like, okay, they're still okay. And, you know, there was this constant fear that I'm going to wake up one morning and have these giant Mari biscuits stuck on my chest. And, you know, there's all of these things that, but I think if we do experience something that we don't like, that we don't pretend we don't like it. You know, we don't dismiss it, because that's not helpful either. It's, wow, okay, I feel quite uncomfortable with these stretch marks or changes in nipples or pigmentation or whatever, hair loss, whatever we're going through, that we don't pretend it's not there, but that we acknowledge that this is uncomfortable and it's not something that we envisaged or we're struggling to accept. We also have to try and move through it as well. Because I think we can get lost in more of the toxic positivity of, these stretch marks are so beautiful and I love every single one of them and they make me feel so good. If that feels genuine, that's amazing. But if it doesn't feel genuine and you are really struggling with them, pretending that they're not there isn't going to help. But it's about sort of acknowledging their presence, acknowledging that this is something to work through, and then moving through it so we're not harboring on it.
Yeah, that's amazing advice. And just as, yeah, again, it can go both ways. It's about not venting about it constantly and always talking about your weight and body changes. But I like that permission to acknowledge that you're not happy with something that's happening, or you're just uncomfortable, and not, yeah, not hiding it. I think that is, especially in the weight department, okay, I find some people can be very vocal about that, complaining about it, and others, yeah, not acknowledging it, I suppose, at all, or just being sensitive about it. I think I also specifically can be sensitive about it because I know that, you know, I can complain about something body-wise, but then you get a remark of, oh, but you're lucky you don't get the weight in your legs. And then you're like, oh, man, I shouldn't complain because, you know, I'm winning in that department. But, yeah, I find the talking about, like, weight gain, even pre-pregnancy, is so sensitive. But it is during this time that I love that advice of just acknowledging where the changes that are happening, and then also just reminding yourself that it is a phase. It is something that, you know, once you've gotten through it and you got through the other end of pregnancy, I suppose that's when, in hindsight, you see things, of course, completely differently. But it's so important to kind of have that mindset now already, or to work on it.
And there might also be space to explore, not just aesthetically, but emotionally, what's going on. So, for example, maybe it's the excess skin, or maybe it's a C-section shelf, sort of your little pooch, or, you know, it could be anything. Maybe it is the hemorrhoid in your bum. I don't know. But the physical change that you're struggling with, we could look at it aesthetically, that I don't like how it looks. That's quite a hard one to change. You know, our bodies will go through changes that are sometimes irreversible. We know that stretch marks won't go away. And if we harbor on, I don't like them, I don't like how they look, and now I'm stuck with them forever, we're not progressing. And maybe there's space there to look at, well, what emotionally does it bring up for me? Maybe I feel as though I'm not whole. Maybe I feel as though I've lost the pre-mom version of myself. Maybe I feel that I've been altered. Maybe I feel that something happened and it wasn't in my control. But I, you know, there's usually something deeper, and to have a look at that as well. Because we can maybe shift that. We can't take the physical away, but emotionally, maybe there is something to work through, to reconcile with, and to change.
So, so true. And while you're just speaking, I just sort of, if I were to have kids in my early 20s, how different it would be, because of who I was back then as well. But also now, if I have to think of, a lot of things in my body have changed in ways that sometimes now I'm blaming pregnancy, but then I'm also 36 and I'm wondering, but is this, you know, something that would in any way naturally happen as I, you know, reach towards 40? And it gives me this peace of mind of going like, fuck it. I don't want to, you know, focus on all these things that are changing the whole time. I actually just want to be healthy enough to be around for my future child's 20th birthday or 21st birthday. Like the perception and everything is changing so much. And I think that's a lot of things of being, you know, mid 30s, having your first child that might not be, you know, beneficial or, you know, work as smoothly, like your body, for instance, post having a baby in your 20s. But then from a mental aspect and the sort of tools that I feel like I'm equipped with at this age and what matters to me more is so, so beneficial that like that I feel a bit more prepared for this whole journey.
I love that. I really, really love that. And I think that's an incredible example of how we can look at it inclusively of I am noticing these changes, whether it be age changes or pregnancy postpartum changes. I'm noticing these changes. At times I feel quite uncomfortable with them. You know, I don't always love the changes and really not pretending they're not there, accepting them, allowing myself to have permission to feel them. But then also looking at how wonderfully blessed I am that I am getting older. You know, what a privilege it is to get older. It means I'm living and I've got another year, another decade. And the same sort of with being mom, you know, how incredible that this body of mine gets to run around in the playground for another year, or, you know, that this body created this life. So I think if we can get to a space where we acknowledge the parts we don't like, but also view it from a more positive space, I think that's a great place to be in.
Yeah, that's a good positive message to end off this episode. I think we can still, yeah, we can do another talk where we chat about postpartum mental health, and even I think a big focus, I think, but then we'll have to wait for me to actually go through the birthing experience. But I really want to chat about the whole, you know, expectation around birth, C-section versus natural, all those things, about the pressure around it, surrounding it. There's a hell of a lot for me that I feel like I want to say, and I haven't even had the birthing experience yet, but I find it fascinating. I think maybe we do another session where we talk about postpartum, me being very ignorant, and then we could do a follow-up after I've actually gone through this.
A pre and a post birth, and then compare the two. What a great study that would be.
Oh, thanks so much for your time. It's really everything that you share, just it's reframed so much in my mind. And I know it's going to be so helpful to so many that tune in and listen to this.
No, it's been absolutely incredible. And I live vicariously now through pregnant people. I think I told you sort of the number three broody is kicking in. But then you're really outnumbered. I'm not sure I'm ready for that.
Well, most of my friends now, like I never thought it was, you know, like in inverted commas, a trend. Most of them are wanting third kids now. Like they're 39, 20, 40, and they're like, yeah, they're going to go for a third round. I was like, what? So many of you? I just didn't expect that. So it's never too late.
Who knows? Never say never. Ian's going to ban me from ever speaking to you again.
Obviously, I'm going to end this year for you to have kids because I don't have one yet. So I'm like, again, naively optimistic of going, do it, a big family sounds fantastic.
Oh, thank you so much. It was amazing to spend the morning with you.
Awesome. Thanks so much. We'll chat again soon.
Bye.
Bye.